Welcome to this latest edition of the Real Deal Podcast on this 15th of October 2019. You have just watched Washington National history. They are going to the World Series for the first time ever. The Washington Nationals are the 2019 National League champions as they complete the demolition. And I mean demolition of the St. Louis Cardinals, 7-4. This game was over early. First inning, Nationals have a 7-run inning. Cardinals were sloppy. They knocked Hudson around. Young pitcher, just on the road, had no chance in that spot. Got knocked around. Didn't get help by the Cardinal defense. Nationals got some good at-bats, made the Cardinals pay, and from then on, it was basically was a coronation. I mean, I never got the sense, even with the bases loaded, Carpenter up in a big spot, I never got the sense that the Nationals were ever in danger of losing this game. They were in total control of this game. They were in total control of this series, and they are going to the World Series where they will be well-rested, to say the least, get a chance to get some guys bumps and bruises, guys that are late into the season, get their rotation in order. You would have to think that they have enough time to where Strasburg game one, Scherzer game two, Corbin game three. I would think that would be the, you can go Scherzer game one. I mean, Strasburg, Scherzer, it really doesn't matter, but I think with this series being over with as quickly as it is, the Nationals will go with Strasburg in game one. But again, that is a great problem, not a good problem, a great problem to have as the Washington Nationals will wait for the winner of the Houston Astros, New York Yankees series. In which ALCS, in which the Houston was able to get past New York 4-1. Gerrit Cole continues to just pitch, like a man possessed. I mean, his numbers, 25 starts, his last 25 starts, he's 19-0. His last 25 starts. Didn't even have his best stuff. Houston can beat you any type of way. They can beat you scoring 10, 12 runs. They can beat you, with the pitching. They can beat you any which way but possible. I thought the Yankees blew an opportunity in that game, too. Even though if you're a Yankee fan, you were happy about getting the split, but you easily could have been up 2-0. Houston having Gerrit Cole on the road in a game three is a major advantage. Cervino pitched well, but, Gerrit Cole will probably win the Cy Young this winter and get the biggest free agent contract of the winter. Without question, he's going to get paid. So he was able to handle his business. Altuve continues to just be a beast in the postseason. He hits a home run, and Houston got tacked on late a couple runs and were able to hold off the Yankees 4-1. But it's about the Nationals, baby. It's about the Washington Nationals. Can you believe that this franchise coming into the season, all the talk was about a player who is no longer on the team? That was all the talk was about. Bryce Harper. Bryce Harper's going to Philadelphia. Bryce Harper, $325 million. And again, I don't want to sit up here and pound on Bryce Harper. Because it's not about that. But ultimately, it's about starting pitching. The rules of baseball, successful baseball, never change as far as I'm concerned. You get great starting pitching. You get some clutch hitting. You have a decent to good bullpen. Not even a great bullpen. Great bullpen. A decent to good bullpen. You can win. You can win a championship. And again, I think the Nationals match up well against either one of those teams. I think the Nationals would be probably favored against the Yankees. I think they would be favored against the Yankees. I think Houston still commands the respect of being, deservedly so, of being the overall favorite. They have the best balance of offense, starting pitching, and bullpen. Right now, the Nationals can beat anybody. You can't tell me that the Nationals haven't watched the Nationals and what they've done against the Dodgers. The comeback against Milwaukee and the complete just obliteration of the St. Louis Cardinals. You can't tell me that this is not a championship team. It is an absolute championship team. I'm not even gonna call it a team of destiny. I'm gonna call it a team that is championship caliber, that is playing better than anyone right now in baseball, and a team that just has whose confidence level is through the roof right now. I mean, two out hits, the dominant starting pitching, the bullpen has been, has been out of this world during the postseason. Doolittle, Rayner, Hudson. Even when Corbin came out the bullpen earlier in the series, it was tremendous. Saw Scherzer come out the bullpen in this come out the bullpen in the Dodgers series and get some big outs. So this team right now is primed and poised not to just show up in the World Series, but to win a championship. Period. And again, the organization did it the right way. They built their team the absolute way that you are supposed to build a team with the starting pitching, homegrown talent. And they have a perfect mix. You look at the team right now. They check off every box that you would want in a World Series caliber, World Championship caliber team. They have the starting pitching. They have the superstar players, the all-star caliber players, Soto and Rendon. They have the veteran players who are coming up big, Kendricks, Zimmerman. They have depth off the bench. And again, this was a team after 50 games was 19 and 31 after 50 games. That tells you how long the baseball season is. They were 19 and 31. And now they find themselves 4 games away from officially calling DC the city of champions or the district of champions. St. Louis, listen, very rare that the Cardinals put up this type of showing when they do get to the postseason. But listen, it happens. The 1990 A's got swept by Cincinnati Reds, and that A's team was great. I mean, you're talking about what Ricky Henderson and McGuire, Canseco. So in baseball, crazy things happen. A team gets hot, especially with starting pitching. I mean, this was out of this world starting pitching. I mean, Corbin had great stuff the first 4 innings, but I thought he looked, seemed like he ran out of gas in the fifth inning. He was so pumped up. He was so, I mean, the ball was flying out of his hands the first 4 innings, but he kind of settled down. And again, I thought he got tired in the fifth inning. They got to him. He ended up striking out 11 or 12. They got to the bullpen. The bullpen handled this business. The bullpen got every big out that the bullpen gave up no runs. The bullpen got every big out that you could that was necessary. Got out bases loaded jams. Carpenter had no chance against Doolittle. Seemingly had zero chance against Doolittle. So they did their job, and the Nationals are now a team where you no longer can call them choke artists. You no longer can call them a team that underachieve. All that stuff is out the window, even if they don't win a championship. Now, yes, you want to win a World Series, but understand this about baseball. It's not like the Super Bowl in football, where it's win or bust for the Super Bowl, because nobody cares about the Super Bowl loser. In baseball, you get to the World Series. That's like getting to the Final Four in the NCAA tournament. It's a big, it's a absolute big deal. you get to the World Series. Anybody can lose in the World Series. Babe Ruth lost in the World Series. Barry Bonds lost in the World Series. Mickey Mantle lost in the World Series. Okay, we've seen Willie Mays lose in the World Series. Some of the greatest players that have ever played this game have lost in the World Series. Anybody can lose in the World Series. So the most difficult part is getting there. These are the most, players say all the time, the players for the most part have fun in the World Series. The most pressurized games are the league championship series. Or in the Nationals case, I mean, the playoff game, the win or go home game down, 3-1 against Milwaukee. I mean, think about that for a second. They were down 3-1 at home against the Milwaukee Brewers. This thing was almost over before it even started. It was almost over before it even started. The amount of resiliency out of this team has been unreal over the course of the season and through the playoffs. And you've just seen it as I watched each game, the momentum, the confidence grow and grow and grow to a point to where every time they step on the field, they feel like they're gonna win the game. They're gonna get every big strikeout, get every two out hit, make the great defensive play. And this series was over in essence, really after game one. Unlike the Yankees took advantage of not facing Verlander or Garrett Cole in the first two games. Zach Greinke, very good pitcher, not on level of those two, took advantage of that. They were able to steal game one. Well, not even steal game one. They ran through, shut out, knocked around Houston game one, 7-0. St. Louis had an opportunity in game one, no Scherzer, no Strasburg, and you let Anibal Sanchez almost no hit you. That cannot happen. That told you all you needed to know about the direction of the series and the fact that St. Louis was just not going to be able to do anything with Washington. Once you get through 3-1 down against Milwaukee and 1-0, 2-1 down against the Dodgers, win a game five in Dodger Stadium, the rest is almost gravy. I mean, at that point, it really, you feel like you're playing with house money. And the Nationals will go into the World Series as loose as a team could be, as confident as a team could be. Now, big challenge moving forward. You're going to have a lot of time off. This Yankee series has at least two more games left. If the Yankees win tomorrow, then it's going to go at least six. So that game one could be tricky. That for game one of the World Series could be tricky in terms of not so much the starting pitching, but in terms of the hitting, timing, things of that nature. But again, that at this point in the season where you've played so many games, guys have dealt with injuries over the course of the season. You have Robles just getting back. Zimmerman has had some injuries. Scherzer has had some injuries. Your bullpen is probably tired. All the pitchers are tired at this point. Days off certainly will not hurt. It is a good problem to have when you can get some guys some extra time off. I'm very pleased that the Nationals were able to clinch this at home for their fans. There are some fans that have been diehards since the Nationals came about in 2005, going back to Frank Robinson and you see a guy like you see a city that dealt with so much losing between the Wizards and the Washington football team and the heartbreak of the Capitals up until 2018, that DC deserve the real DC fans. There's a bunch of fake DC fans out here, fake DC sports fans out here, and I'll just call it the way it is. But the true fans that root for all the home teams, root for Georgetown, root for the Capitals and the Washington football team and the Wizards. This is your night. This is your night. Enjoy it. Enjoy it. It is hard to get to the World Series. It's not easy to get into the World Series. You know, what the San Francisco Giants did in the early part of this decade, three championships in 5 years, that's something that you're not going to see anytime soon. It's just, I don't care how much resources you have. You know, what the Red Sox have been doing, you know, four championships since, you know, in what, 15 years, 2019. Yeah, four championships in 15 years. Probably not going to see that. You're not going to see that in the next 10, 15 years because the talent around baseball is spread out. It's no longer about which team has the most money. It's about how you develop talent. It's about how you draft and develop talent. It's just that simple. It's about getting, you know, the right front office people to make, you know, to make the right decisions. It's about, you know, not going crazy with analytics. So it's a lot of components that go into building a championship baseball team. And Mike Rizzo, the ownership of the Nationals, have done just that. They have built a championship caliber baseball team. And again, I mentioned this in last week's podcast. Sometimes it just happens like this in sports. There have been years where people thought the Nationals were favored to win a championship or were going to win the World Series. Didn't happen. Just like with the Capitals, there have been years, you know, nobody thought the Capitals were going to win a championship in 2018. People thought their time had passed. People thought they had, you know, missed their best chances. The Ovechkin was possibly going to be on the decline. Even with this Nationals team, no one thought coming into this season that the Nationals would be in the World Series. I did not hear. I heard Dodgers. You heard, you heard mainly Dodgers. The Dodgers were the team that everybody was talking about in the National League. It was the Dodgers and basically everybody else. Like, nobody was even worth talking about in the National League outside the Dodgers. But lo and behold, you have this team that just came together at the perfect time, got healthy at the perfect time, ended the season red hot. And ever since getting past that Milwaukee game, they have, you know, played at a level going back and forth with the Dodgers, taking the Dodgers' best hit. And, you know, game five against the Dodgers, you know, winning those last two games. Now they have won six straight postseason games after being down 2-1 against the Dodgers. They, you know, they are a freight train. They are a freight train as they head to the World Series. So, and I would think that Howie Kendricks would be the LCS MVP. I think Kendricks, yeah, probably I would lean towards Kendricks. More than likely. A lot to talk about on this latest edition of the Real Deal podcast. I want to get to this situation in the NBA with China and LeBron and Adam Silver and Daryl Morey and all parties involved in this particular situation that has really taken the league over in the last week or so. And I mentioned this to someone. I mentioned this last week. There are a lot of different viewpoints of this from this situation. A lot of perspectives, a lot of layers, a lot of nuance. This is not a clear, it's not a cut and dry situation. Okay. I was having a conversation with somebody about it today, gave me another viewpoint. It was a very fair one. And I came home, was thinking about it, read some stuff, read the Dave McManaman column or P article in ESPN just about an hour ago. It dropped up maybe a couple hours ago it basically gives a detailed reporting on the meeting that happened with Adam Silver and, you know, the Nets and the Lakers and some kind of like a play-by-play on that situation with LeBron and the whole nine and the whole bit. I think that if you're LeBron James, you are the most powerful player in the league. You become kind of like a godfather figure in the league. Your opinion, your voice counts as much as anybody, more than anybody's. I think you have to go all in. Let me read you a couple of tweets from LeBron. I have them up right here. His last couple of tweets that he sent out. Real quick. This is the last one. My team and this league has just went through a difficult week. I think people need to understand what a tweet or statement can do to others. And I believe nobody stopped and considered what would happen. Could have waited a week to send it. Okay. Let me clear up the confusion. I do not believe there was any consideration for the consequences and ramifications of the tweet. I'm not discussing the substance. Others can talk about that. Okay. So LeBron indirectly is going after Daryl Morey, right? And the reason why LeBron is going after Daryl Morey is Daryl Morey's tweet affected the player's bottom line, which is money. It was reported in the Dave McManaman story that one of the Lakers, I don't know who, but one of the Lakers lost $1 million endorsement deal. Just like that, $1 million. Now, if someone else's comments take money out of your pocket, you have every right to be pissed off. I can't tell the players, despite how much money they're making, despite how much money they have in the bank, despite all the income that they have earned from the NBA endorsements, can't sit up here and tell them not to react to a comment that affects their pockets. It would be just insane for me to say that, because I know how it would feel if somebody else's comments took money out of my pockets. So if you're LeBron James, herein lies an opportunity to go all in. Come out, call Daryl Morey by name, be like, listen, you're taking money out of our pockets. It's not just my pockets, even the rank and file player who's not worth $400 or $500 million. Okay. So you're taking money, this is a business. You're taking money out of our pockets. Because I don't want to hear about players having to stand with the media answering questions. Yeah, that's not it. Players, they know comment questions all the time to American media. A lot of these players have been answering questions or not answering questions since they were 15, 14 years old, 16 years old. And some of them in high school, most of them, you know, at the college levels, they are as media savvy as you can possibly be. Okay, especially dealing with the media in 2019. So that's not the issue. Don't buy into this, how players are just incensed that they have to answer all these questions. No. They are incensed that this tweet that was sent out by Daryl Morey has affected their bottom line and has their pockets. And they have every right to be pissed off about that. Okay? Every right. What's every right? You cannot sit up here. I don't care how much money a player is making. Somebody takes $1 million out of your pocket, you're gonna be pissed off about that. So if you're LeBron James, just go all in. Stop trying to just jump, dive into the pool. Don't put one leg in or the other leg in and eventually put your whole body. jump into the entire, take dive into the entire pool. Okay, you don't forget about this being politically correct, forget about this passive aggressive, forget about these subliminal indirect tweets. No. Go all in. Say yes, I believe Daryl Morey should face consequences. Because if one of us as a player would have mentioned this, would have said something like this, or tweeted this, we would face consequences. And in that meeting with Adam Silver, LeBron James addressed that. Adam Silver's, pushback was, "Hey, none of the players basically got fined for criticizing Donald Trump." Difference is Donald Trump is, an American president. Daryl Morey's tweet was towards, a country. That was the difference. And the players were you had two teams that were going to play a basketball game in China, along with the relationship that China has with the United States and the billions of dollars that you know that billion billions of that billion dollar relationship. And how many players have, shoe deals and endorsement deals with China? All that matters. I mean, business, listen, business is business at the end of the day. Business is business. And again, you have the right, listen, you have the right to say what you want. You have the freedom, freedom of speech, but be prepared to deal with the smoke from your words. So Daryl Morey has to be prepared to deal with the smoke from the Players Association, from fans, from LeBron James, from the Houston owner, all of that. He could don't be surprised. Daryl Morey could absolutely lose his job. He could if endorsements keep dropping, if sponsors keep pulling out, if this thing lasts another couple weeks, and especially into the season starts next Tuesday. If people are still talking about this time next week, don't be surprised if Daryl Morey doesn't have a job, fair or unfair. So I think that, if you're LeBron James, I just think that you got to go all in. I don't think you hold anything back. You're going to face criticism regardless. I mean, people are going to call you out saying, you can't call Daryl Morey out for freedom of speech when you speak out on social justice issues yourself. Can't breathe, all black, Black Lives Matter, things of that nature. So he's going to get the criticism regardless. You might as well be, if you're going to get criticized, be criticized for being 100%, 1,000% genuinely authentic and not afraid and not trying to politic this. Not try to make the perfect statement. There's no such thing as a perfect statement. You're gonna piss somebody off. It's just a net, the nature of the beast. Especially as an African American athlete who is worth $500 million. People hate on LeBron anyway for no reason. Might as well give him a reason. Might as well give him a reason. They're gonna hate whether you're right. They're gonna hate whether you're wrong. They're gonna hate. If you stay silent, just might as well just be your authentic self. Just be keep it 1,000. And I listen. He comes out there and criticizes Daryl Morey directly. I don't see how you could. I wouldn't have a problem with it because LeBron James is supposed to be for the players. Period. He is supposed to be for the players. He is supposed to protect the players. Want to shift gears a bit to some NFL and college football action. A number of big games, a few big games in the college football. We'll get to that. But week six of the NFL ended not the way the National Football League wanted it to end. Now, of course, with us and with media types talking about more about the officiating than about the fact that the Packers are 5-1. The last two calls, the two Trey Flowers calls in terms of legal hands to the face, are calls that they professional officials should never miss, period. That is the type of call that gets a team eliminated from the playoffs. Instead of the Detroit being 3-1-1, they are now 2-2-1. Okay. Three games in the win column out of first place behind the Packers. And a game down due to losing in the division. Losing that game in a divisional game at that. That was a big game, even only in week 6. That's a divisional game. Detroit's going to be around that wild card, in contention for the wild card, around possibly 9-7. That was a big game. And, we've been talking about officials for years upon years. We've been talking about officials for years upon years. And it's just certain calls you just cannot miss. You as a official, it's one thing to miss the call once, but to miss it twice, basically that's the same call against the same player twice, can't do it. Cannot miss that call. And Detroit has every right to be pissed off. Now, they did kick a million field goals, and there were times in that game early in this first half where they could have put Green Bay in a hole. They allowed Green Bay to stay in it, stay within striking distance, and the next thing you know, they were in for a dogfight. And, of course, you allow Aaron Rodgers to hang around. He's going to do what Aaron Rodgers does, and that's, take his team down and put his team in a position to win the game. Detroit had a number of penalties that extended drives. They set up with too many field goals. They were also shut down offensively in the second half. I mean, Green Bay, Detroit had 299 yards of total offense. I would say at least about 250. They had about 250 of that in the first half. They did nothing offensively in the second half. I mean, nothing. Green Bay controlled that game in the second half. It was basically a tale of two halves in terms of how the flow of the game. And Green Bay had three turnovers. So Detroit wins the turnover battle and still loses the game. They were negative. I mean, which is hard to do. It's hard to be +3 and still lose the game. You should not be +3 and lose a football game anywhere. But ultimately, you give Green Bay credit. They're still missing some pieces as far as the injuries to Devontae Adams, who was who was developed into a legit top 10 receiver. I mean, he really is developed into that type of player. He's by far their go-to receiver. Jimmy Graham is a shell of what he once was. He creates very little separation at this point. Green Bay did what it had to do. Green Bay now has beaten everybody in the division. They are 3-0 in that division. They are in control of that division. I don't think Green Bay – I think Green Bay is a team that I still need to see more of with the offense, with them offensively. But we know when you have Aaron Rodgers that you can beat anybody on any given day. If I were ranking the teams in the NFC, I would put Green Bay behind both New Orleans and San Francisco. We'll talk about those two teams in depth a little bit later on in the podcast, but especially San Francisco. But listen, Detroit, caught a bad break, or a couple of bad breaks with those calls. Those are calls that NFL officials should not miss, let alone twice, let alone once. Once, let alone twice. So, tough break for Detroit, but that's life in the NFL. The Jets, shocked the Cowboys 24-22. This was the return, of course, of Sam Darnold. That offense, the Jets look like just a completely different team. I mean, the Jets without Darnold looked like one of the worst, four or five worst teams in the NFL. with Darnold, they look like a team that could not threaten for the playoffs, but they look like a team that will be that I wouldn't want to see if I were trying to make the playoffs in late November in the month of December. The Jets have some players. They have, remember, they've been bad for so long. They have a number of first round draft picks on that team. They have some talent on that team. Do they need a number one receiver? Sure. Absolutely. But there's a lot of talent on that team. Dallas, let's call it, and again, I'm not a Dallas fan by any stretch of the imagination, but anybody who's criticizing Jason Garrett, you're 1,000% right. That team is not well coached. Garrett, first of all, I'm gonna tell you why they're not well coached. I'm not gonna just look at just individual decisions in this game. I'm not even talking about the fourth and two, down 7-3, where if you kick a field goal, it's 7-6, and then they come back with a 92-yard touchdown to make it 14-3. Let's put that aside for a second. Put that aside. I'm talking about the fact that in the last 3 weeks, Dallas has came out as flat as a pancake. And to me, when you're coming out, you're down 17 nothing, you're down 14-3, you're down 21-3. That just shows that you're not ready to play. And that is coaching. Team coming out flat is coaching. A team coming out the half flat is coaching. That is nothing but coaching. Everybody has injuries. So I know they've been banged up on the offensive line. Amari Cooper went down in that game with the quad injury. Everybody has injuries. Everybody. That is life in the NFL. Okay? So, I don't want to hear about the injuries. That's a horrible loss, even with Darnold back, especially coming off back-to-back losses, where everybody's basically been saying that you are a fraud because you can't beat good teams. Like, Dallas should have came out there and absolutely manhandled the Jets. Manhandled them. But this is what Dallas is right now. This is who the Cowboys are. They're going to be a team that, now again, no one's running away from that division. Philly's 3-3. Washington and Giants and Washington are not even relevant. Okay, so they're competing with one other team. And they're competing for one spot because there's no team. The AFC East is getting one team out of that division. And that's going to be the division winner. There's no way multiple teams are making the playoffs. There's too many other quality teams in the AFC. So this was a horrible loss for Dallas. They come out as flat as a pancake. And we'll see what transpires. Again, Jason Garrett, his job is not in jeopardy. This year, he will not be fired in season. I don't think Jason Garrett will be the coach in 2020, but he will not be fired. I don't see any way that he's going to be fired in season. I don't see that happening because I think, again, they now if they lost like if they were like 3-8, 3-9, something like that, that's a situation where they've lost 7 to 8 straight. Even if they lose to Philly, win the next game, go 4-4, no, I think the wheels will have to completely just come off the fall, completely fall off for Jason Garrett to be fired in season. Houston gets an impressive victory over Kansas City, 31-24. This is the bottom line by Kansas City. Don't be fooled by people saying, well, there's an answer for Patrick Mahomes. There's not an answer for Patrick Mahomes. You know what the answer is for Patrick Mahomes? It's him being on the sideline and you running the football. Houston held the ball for 39 minutes. They had 192 yards rushing on 41 rushes. They outrushed Kansas City 192 to 53. There's still no stopping that offense. The offense had, think about this, right? That offense scored 24 points in 21 minutes, roughly. What if they had the ball, say, 25 minutes or 30 minutes? How many points did they score? So I don't think you can, like, the key to stopping, again, the key to stopping that offense is keeping them off the field. at running the football. Now, Kansas City needs to do something as far as a trade, as far as getting someone a run stopper. They're not going anywhere with this defense because it's the formula is going to be the same. These teams, you know, whereas Indianapolis, Houston, teams are going to run the foot. Don't New England, they'll eventually fix their running game over the course of the season. That's just a matter of time. Those teams run the football. Period. They run the football. So if you can't, even Denver has a decent, Lindsay is a good running back. So they have to fix that run defense. Like not to a point to where it becomes a shutdown run defense, but to a point to where you can create more possessions for Patrick Mahomes. You get Mahomes on the field, like just get that offense on, have that offense on the field anywhere from 28 to 31 minutes. They don't need to be a ball control dominant offense, because they're gonna score quickly. I mean, they're a big play offense, so they don't need to be on the field 33, 34, 35 minutes. If you're telling me that offense is on the field 28 to 31 minutes, they're going to score 30 to 40 points easily. Easily. There's no matching up with that offense. Period. There's no matching up with that offense. But they have to get that run defense under control. The most impressive victory of the weekend, of week six had to be San Francisco over Los Angeles Rams 20-7. This was a dominant defensive performance by the 49ers. The 49ers are a legit Super Bowl contender. There's just no two ways about it. They have all the ingredients, especially, you know, with the franchise quarterback, the great defensive line, improved secondary. They run the football. What they did to the Jared Goff and the Rams, it should be illegal in 21 states. I mean, Goff had 157 yards. The Rams had 157 yards of offense. Goff had 78 yards passing. Think about that for a second. 78 yards passing. That defense that is a top five defense. That is a they are a physical. It seemed like the Rams just didn't want to be hit anymore. I mean, they punked the Rams, period. Now, the Rams address them, you know, address a need as far as the secondary, getting Jalen Ramsey, who we know has all world talent. You know, if you're the Rams, you're not worrying about the two first round picks in the fourth round in 2021. You are in absolute win now mode. You're trying to win Super Bowl this year. You're not building for 2 to 3 years down the road. You already have. Listen, I think Jared Goff is a very good quarterback. I think Jared Goff can be a franchise quarterback. But Todd Gurley is still one of the most important non-quarterbacks in the league, period. Like, let's not think we kind of forgot how good, how great a player Todd Gurley is, a healthy Todd Gurley is. They missed, there's no two ways about it, how much they missed the Todd Gurley in that offense. Jared Goff is not at that point in school where he's going to carry an offense. It's just not going to happen at this stage in his career. He's not ready for that yet. And listen, I don't know if it's the rest of the league catching up to St. Louis or catching up to the Rams or solving Sean McVay. I just look at their offense ever since the Todd Gurley knee, the issues with Todd Gurley's knee. There's no replacement. Like, here's, you know, this is what happens when you give a player, when you pay a player when you don't have to pay him. They made Todd Gurley the highest paid running back. They could have waited a year and added pieces to their roster before they paid that contract. They did not have to give Gurley that contract when they gave it to him. Now, eventually, yes, but when they gave it to him, they did not have to give him that contract. And I said this prior to the injury. I wasn't even thinking about the injury at this point. I mean, I don't think the injury wasn't a factor. So you give him that type of money, it limits you in terms of what you can do for in terms of your depth and the rest of your roster. And you create a situation where you have very little room for error when it comes to injuries. They are thin at the offensive line. They are thin at the running back position. They are thin in a lot of places because they have so many guys making so much money. And again, Rams are in all in mode now. They are all in to try to get a championship. Minnesota has their way with Philly. Probably Minnesota's best win of the season. Kirk Cousins, big day for him. I don't know what the Philly defense does not. This does not look like the same defense of the last couple of years. I mean, their defense has been horrible for the most part this season. They have to get that situated moving forward. I mean, everybody talks about Carson Wentz, but it has been the Philly defense has been the main concern of that team, and there was a time Philly, again, we were talking about Philly's having a top five, top seven defense. That defense is a mediocre at best at this point, at this stage of the season. Seattle takes out Cleveland 13-28. Again, Cleveland is absolute must-see TV because Cleveland, you can count on wild games, you know that they can beat anybody on any given Sunday or lose to anybody on any given Sunday. So I'm watching every Cleveland game, regardless of whether they're on television or not. Like, I'm watching whether it's prime time or not. Like, Cleveland is a must-see team. They really are. I mean, you don't know what Baker Mayfield's going to do from one throw or one play to the next. And he has been an absolute turnover machine. I mean, a turnover machine. If I'm Cleveland, I'm building an offense around Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb is having an all-pro caliber season. I'm using Nick Chubb like the Rams used a healthy Todd Gurley. Maybe I'll be honest with you. Russell Wilson is the MVP of the league right now. It goes without. I think as great as Mahomes has been statistically, Wilson at this point through six games has 14 touchdowns and no interceptions. No one expected Seattle to be this good. No one. And Seattle's defense is not great. I mean, their defense is not what it once was. Not even close. I mean, their defense is decent, but they're winning games with their offense. They're winning games, they have, again, a guy who I would vote for MVP. They have a great running game. They stick to what they do. They have an identity as far as offensively. They're gonna run the football. They're gonna allow Russell Wilson, because we know Westbrook can't close games. We understand that. And we'll do some NBA soon enough. Some actual basketball, not this overseas, U.S. versus China. But Russell Wilson is one of the best closers in the league. He may be the best closer in football right now. Really is. His fourth quarter numbers, his red zone numbers are off the charts. And this is going back to even last season. But right now, I would vote him MVP, period. So, but that's definitely subject to change. Big winner in college football, again, was LSU. LSU came out there and was able to handle Florida. Florida actually played a very good game for the most part. Florida was up at one point, 28-21, in one of the most difficult places in college football to play. LSU hit the accelerator, and that was just a level that Florida could not reach. Joe Barrow has to be second in Heisman right now. Tua Tagovailoa from Alabama, who, without question, is the front runner, but Barrow has to be second. I mean, this guy is throwing the ball all over the place. The LSU defense stood up in the second half of that game after being shaky in the first half. They really stood up in the second half, physically took it to Florida. And I think I like Florida. I think Florida has improved offensively. We know Florida, what Florida can do defensively, which makes LSU's offense even that much scarier. The fact that they put 42 points on Florida. You know, Florida has a top defense, a great defense, not a good defense, a great defense. And LSU put 42 on them. Oklahoma is able to handle business against Texas. Probably shouldn't have been that close considering some of the opportunities they had in the first half. Georgia somehow lost to South Carolina at home. There's no way Georgia, South Carolina doesn't even belong on the same field as Georgia as far as talent goes. I mean, they really don't. That was a game where Fromm was awful. Georgia was at the sleep, was basically fell asleep at the wheel, put their, you know, their faith and hopes into a kicker, and he missed a 42-yard field goal. Shouldn't have been that close to begin with. With all that being said, Georgia is still in the mix because they still have play Auburn, have Florida, and if they play their cards right and win the SEC East, will play the winner of Alabama, LSU in the SEC Championship. Keep a close eye on Wisconsin. They are destroying people now. They have one real quality win as far as a ranked opponent, and that's Michigan. They still have Penn State. They still have Ohio State. But they're playing defense out of this world. 29 points in six games is just ridiculous. I mean, you know, even in the Big Ten, which is not a high-scoring conference, that's still insane as far as the type of defense that they're playing right now. So there you go with the college football. Again, as the weeks go by, it just the anticipation for that LSU-Alabama game is going to be – this is going to be as anticipated as it has been since 2011 when they were the two preeminent programs in college football, Alabama, LSU in that order. LSU right now has been the most impressive team in college football. They've beaten in terms of quality wins. You know, they win. They take out Texas. Okay, take out Texas, and now they take out Florida. No team in college football has that combination of quality wins under his belt. So LSU can basically write his own ticket and control his own destiny in terms of the SEC championship. Now, again, everything's going to come down more than likely to the Alabama game. So we'll see what happens with that. As far as power goes, I told you last week that Lakeisha was going to die. We kind of saw that, you know, coming from a mile away. A lot of people knock Lala's acting. I mean, it's all about expectations. I mean, I don't expect Lala to ever be on Broadway doing Macbeth. Okay, or Shakespeare. Like, she's going to play a hood chick. A runaway girl, that's about as much range as Lala has, to be honest with you, which is fine. I mean, we'll see what happens when she's on The Shy, because she's going to be on next season of The Shy, so we'll see what transpires with that. But again, overall, I was fine with this episode. Tyreek's development, what they're doing with the politics, with Tate, Ghost, and Ramona. Eventually, you know, sounds like Tate is going to expose Ghost next week, possibly to, I don't know, to get him. Tate doesn't have many moves at this point. He needs to be, you know, siding up with Ghost, but at this point, I think that relationship has ran its course. I don't know what they're going to do with Tate. They're not going to kill him. He's a senator, councilman, you know, was a governor candidate. That's just not going to happen. So, very interesting to see what they do with Tate. It's evident now that Dre is back in the mix with his ankle bracelet off. Now he can make some moves. He can try to get back fully into the drug game. So I can see. So now I'm seeing what it could be looking like for Dre moving in the future. Again, the Tyreek aspect of this story, it's clearly spinoff material. Book of Ghosts. This is all what Tyreek is going. You know, the plan for Tyreek. Tyreek is going to be, outside of Ghost, probably the biggest, and from an outside of Ghost and Mary J. Blige, the biggest star on that Book of Ghosts following episode 15 of Power. When Power Book 2 Ghost is going to come out, probably later, I would say late in 2020, probably summer of 2020, and maybe even fall of 2020, the way he pushed back some of these popular shows. But Tyreek's not going anywhere before then. I don't believe Ghost, Omarion Hardwick is going anywhere before that as well. He's going to lead that spinoff without question. Now, could Tommy be killed in episode 15? Absolutely. Wouldn't be surprised at all. I'd be shocked if they kill Tommy before the season finale, which would be episode 15. I'm not talking about the fall finale. I'm talking about the January, early February finale in terms of next year. Like, I don't see Tommy going anywhere anytime soon from that standpoint. So they do this every year. I don't know why they take a break this late in the season, but it's been happening the last two seasons. They did it after the Raina episode in 2017, which was only one episode left, which made zero sense. They did, and last year they did it after episode 7, right before Kanan got killed in the Friend of the Family episode 8. So, you know, they do it every season, late in the season. But everybody knows that we'll all be here come October 27th at 12:01. So they know that as well. So when the demand is high, you know, when the demand is high, you can do what you want. Again, congratulations to the 2019 National League champion Washington Nationals. We'll see them in the World Series, and I will see you next time on this list, on the next edition of the Real Deal Podcast, telling it like it is with no apologies. Thanks for listening. I'm out.